Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In this episode, we're finishing up our journey through the T section of the Monster Manual, and we're going to take a look at the Triton, the Troglodyte, and the Turtle, with a nod to the Troll who we already did a special episode on. Before we do that, though, it's time to thank a new Patreon supporter. This is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if you support at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my new podcast, Patron Deities. Well, I say new, I keep saying new, but it's actually been going on for a while now, in which I take a look at the Deities and Demigods book and how to use world religion and mythology in games. So let's all thank Tim Edwards. Thank you very much, Tim. Alright, let's get going. First off, we have the Triton. Now, here's the thing about the Triton. There's nothing wrong with the Triton. The Triton is fine. The Triton is a fishman. Unlike some of the other fishmen, Triton has the bottom parts of a fish and the upper parts of a person. And they are not necessarily biological creatures. They come from the elemental plane of water. Maybe. It's a little vague about that. Mythologically speaking, Triton was a Greek deity. He was a child of Poseidon and Amphitrite. But the term gradually came to be used to describe not just Triton himself, who was the herald of Poseidon, who would blow on a conch shell to, I don't know, announce Poseidon's coming, and he could use this conch shell to calm the waters as well. But they began to have this idea of the Tritones, who were sort of ocean spirits or daimones. And sometimes Tritons are described as if they were creatures rather than deities. So for example, here's a section from Pausanias's description of Greece. I saw another Triton among the curiosities at Rome, less in size than the one at Tanagra. The Tritons have the following appearance. On their heads they grow hair like that of marsh frogs, not only in color, but also in the impossibility of separating one hair from another. The rest of their body is rough with fine scales, just as is the shark. Under their ears they have gills. Have a man's nose, but the mouth is broader, and the teeth are those of a beast. Their eyes seem to me blue, and they have hands, fingers, and nails like the shells of the murex. Under the breast and belly is a tail like a dolphin's instead of feet. Anyway, so that is the Triton in a nutshell. He's basically a kind of merman. And Tritons are not necessarily hostile, and in fact they're sometimes on good terms with humans who don't threaten them. They ride around either on seahorses or hippocampuses, and one or the other. Let's not get all this confusion going again. But they're fine, although, again, we already have mermen and Nixies, so the Triton seems a wee bit redundant, but I think maybe my next D&D campaign is going to be all aquatic, because there just are so many aquatic monsters. Maybe a pirate game, or maybe something in a kind of Polynesian-inspired fantasy line with lots of little islands, and each island is its own little environment. I always say I'm going to run an ocean game. It all sounds like fun. I think this may be because I've been reading Patrick O'Brien novels lately. You can tell that I'm stressed out because I'm reading Patrick O'Brien novels. Next up, we have the Troglodyte, another creature from Greek, not mythology, but from Greek literature, from Greek natural history. The thing about the Troglodyte is that the Troglodyte, as it appears in Dungeons & Dragons, has really only one similarity with the classical Troglodyte, because Troglodyte just means cave dweller, or cave diver. If you look at the descriptions of Troglodytes throughout the ancient world, you get them in Herodotus, you get them in other places, they're clearly referring to humans, kind of a primitive, barbaric human tribe. Sort of, well, I mean, I guess, literally, cavemen. And sometimes with the implication that they're kind of cold, which again, I guess, is the cave environment. Whereas the Troglodytes in the Monster Manual are lizard people. And I believe that the Troglodytes first appeared in the 1976 module The Lost Caverns of Choikonth, not to be confused with the 1982 module, The Lost Caverns of Choikanth, which is a remake, but which also has troglodytes in it, but which comes out after the Monster Manual. Now, The Lost Caverns of Choikonth is intended for pretty tough characters, and I think the troglodytes basically fulfill the role of, you know, orcs or goblins or kobolds in that scenario. They're the kind of average monster that appears there, but they're a good deal tougher with their extra hit dice and their fun mechanical bits. They've got chameleon-like skin, they can emit a stinking cloud that scares people, or not scares people, but nauseates people, and they've got some fun illustrations by David Sutherland. Overall, I think troglodytes are pretty good. The only thing I'm not so wild about is the name. it doesn't seem to me to capture what they're really like. Troglodyte has this kind of disparaging tone, right? Am I mistaken or correct in thinking that troglodyte is something that Captain Haddock in Tintin used to call people if he disapproved of them, you know? Troglodyte, bashy bazook! I'm not going to stop recording this podcast and look up what a bashy bazook is, but I assure you I'm going to do it the moment I'm done. Honestly, you could probably have a pretty good scenario with just monsters or people that are the kinds of things Captain Haddock calls people, you know? I'm pretty sure he called somebody a coelacanth at one point. Anyway, troglodytes are fantastic, and one of the things that I've said about Dungeons & Dragons before is that it has a lot of cave-dwelling, primitive humanoid creatures of various kinds, and that's only going to get more so, right? I mean, even here, we've got gnolls and bugbears and goblins and orcs and kobolds and troglodytes, and then we're going to also have, you know, grimlocks and whatever, bullywugs. I guess bullywugs are swamp-dwelling rather than cave-dwelling, but, you know, ultimately, they're all just goons. But the problem, well, it's not a problem, but the reason that I don't want to see this simplified, as much as that kind of might make sense or be elegant, is that I like pretty much all of them. I mean, I don't really care about hobgoblins. If you wanted to if you wanted to remove hobgoblins from your game and replace them with gnolls, I don't think it would make a big difference. But they all have character. And ultimately, that's what I care about more than the fact that mechanically, they're more or less identical. They're not even mechanically identical. They just play a similar role in the game. But I like them all. And I like the troglodyte. So the trend continues. Next up, we have the troll. Now, here's the thing about trolls. I already recorded a special episode on them. It's got Old Norse poetry. It's got the recommendation of classic fantasy literature. It's got some loosely sourced statements about Tolkien. You want to go check it out. So just go back a few episodes, and it's relatively recent. It's only a couple of weeks ago that I did a troll episode, so go listen to that. You don't need me to tell you the trolls are pretty fantastic. And finally, we have the turtle, which comes in two varieties. The turtle, sea, giant, which is great in its own way, but once again, it falls into that category of relatively inoffensive wildlife in the Monster Manual. It seems unlikely to me that you're ever going to need the stats for the turtle, sea, giant. And other than that, what this entry tells you about it is the turtle, it is giant, and it lives in the sea. But by contrast, the turtle, snapping, giant. You know, when giant animals crop up, I have a tendency to say that they are not made any more fearsome by being giant. But I withdraw that remark in the case of the snapping turtle. Because snapping turtles are vicious, but not huge. Like, if you've ever seen a snapping turtle in a zoo or encountered one in real life, they can get pretty big, but not, like, rampage big. But they do look like they could take, well, I believe they look like, and it is absolutely true, that they could take a substantial bite out of you. But now imagine one of those things with its horrible jaws ready to just snip your arm off instead of your finger. That's a terrifying image. They have a particularly vicious feature in that their bite attacks do 6d4 damage. That's pretty grim. I mean, that's a lot for a wildlife encounter. They got good armor class, as you would expect from a turtle, and they have that variable armor class thing where if they're really under attack, they can pull their heads and limbs inside their shells to make them less vulnerable. I think if you're going to have a turtle, snapping, giant in your Dungeons & Dragons game, ideally you would want to model its appearance not on the common snapping turtle, but upon the alligator snapping turtle, which I believe is a little bit larger and much more ferocious looking. In particular, if you're scaling up to large size, it's fun to imagine, well, I suppose D&D characters don't swim around in murky water looking for worms, which is how the alligator snapping turtle hunts. It has a thing in its mouth called the vermiform appendage, I believe, or the vermiform something or other anyway, which is basically like a little tongue that looks like a little worm. So fish come along, they're like, ooh, a delicious worm, and they swim into the alligator snapping turtle's mouth, and it does a mighty bite on them. Also, they get covered in a carpet of algae, like the algae grows on their shell, which gives them a mottled, dark green color, which is really cool. So you could have all kinds of weird stuff growing on the shell of your turtle, snapping, giant. I think if you are running a game that has a swamp, you owe it to yourself to fit in at least one giant snapping turtle amidst the usual diet of bullywugs and man-eating crocogators. And that is it for the T section of the Monster Manual. Wow, we are getting close. There's only two monsters in the next section, and we've done one of them already. We're coming to the end of Season 1, but don't worry, there are lots more monsters to come in the special episodes and in Season 2. So please join me next time as we take a look at one of the goofiest monsters in the Monster Manual, the Umber Hulk, on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.